Coming up on Tech News Today, Dell's 18-inch tablet joins the gargantuan tablet movement. Also, Netflix gets all Facebook-y. And does anyone care if Apple Maps gets better anymore? All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, March 13th, 2013. Wednesday the 13th. Tech News Today is brought to you by The Resumator. Streamline hiring and increase traffic to job postings with The Resumator, the hiring solution used by today's fastest growing companies. For a free 30-day trial and 15% discount, go to theresumator.com/TNT. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPad, Samsung Galaxy, and other smartphones are worth at gazelle.com. And by RingCentral. We do everything in the cloud. That's why we love our cloud-based phone system by RingCentral. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral is $20 a month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. Buy one desk phone, get a second phone free up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use our promo code TWIT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zakhtar.
I'm Jason Howell. Hoo-ha.
You're Jason Howell. And this is the show where I was looking at the screen with the three people, and I just was like, right. That's all the three people. Sorry about that. First time doing the show. Please forgive me.
You guy.
Let's keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, starting with the top 10 in the news views. While the U.S. government is incapable of sensible economic policy, it can change laws to help Netflix and Facebook. The fruits of that novel effort arrive today as U.S. users get what the rest of the earth has had since 2011, the ability to share what you're watching on Netflix with friends on Facebook. International users get an update that allows them more control over what gets posted. Netflix users who opt in will see a friend's favorites and watched by friends now showing up in a couple of rows at the top of their Netflix homepage.
Samsung's unveiling the Galaxy S4 at Radio City Music Hall tomorrow in New York City in an effort to steal yet more buzz away from its biggest smartphone competitor in the U.S., Apple. Although Samsung became the smartphone leader worldwide more than a year ago, Apple still has that number one spot in the States. Reports of the S4 include a 5-inch screen, Qualcomm quad-core chip, while in other markets, it'll rely on the Samsung octa-core 8-core chip.
Changes ahead at Google. Andy Rubin will no longer head up Android at Google. Chrome OS boss Sundar Pichai will be in charge of Android as well as Chrome OS. The move was announced on the official Google blog in a post penned by Larry Page. Rubin is not leaving Google. Page says that Rubin is starting a new chapter at the company. Maybe Google Books? Chapters? Books?
I like that. Good.
Page?
Moonshots was mentioned, too. Good news, everyone. We all know the French work too hard. But thankfully, a Paris court this week banned 7 French Apple stores from forcing employees to work night shifts. And the Apple stores will have to pay 10,000 euros in damages to the unions who filed the suit. French law restricts requiring work between 9 p.m. and 6 a.m. when the French better serve their nation by smoking Gauloises and muttering complaints about the English into their steak frites.
Google had agreed to pay a record $7 million fine to 38 U.S. states after its Street View cars collected passwords and other personal data from home Wi-Fi networks. Google has maintained that the data that was collected between 2008 and 2010 across the U.S. was taken due to a piece of experimental computer code, including in its Street View mapping cars software. Now, the $7 million fine will be split among the states involved in the investigation, but that's really no biggie because Google made $50.2 billion in revenue and $10.7 billion in net income last year.
Now you see it, now you don't. Yesterday, a video showing off Google Now for iPhone and iPad appeared on YouTube. In the video, you can call up Google Now from the Google app. As news spread of its existence, the Google Now video disappeared.
Magic. U.S. Federal Trade Commission issued new guidelines on Tuesday, updating the .com disclosures guidelines issued in 2000. The rules for marketers on TV and radio have always applied to the internet, but examples now illustrate just how they apply on small screens and in social networks. As an example of the examples, the FTC recommends using the word ad before posts in space-constrained postings. They're talking about Twitter.
Next week, AT&T Labs researchers will present data from a recent test that set a record for long-distance network speeds at the Optical Fiber Communication and National Fiber Optics Engineers Conference. This technology allows existing 100 gigabit per second fiber connections to be used to transmit over four times as much data. When used with a new low-loss optical fiber, they can sustain that data rate at distances over 7,500 miles. Obviously could dramatically speed up this whole little internet backbone we rely on, notably via submarine cables that connect the continents.
Wow. That's a lot of freaking gigabits. EA is now in hot water for allegedly lying about SimCity servers. Max's studio head Lucy Bradshaw has told reporters several times that SimCity offloads calculations of the game to the servers, and that, quote, a significant amount of engineering work, end quote, would be needed to rewrite the game for a single player. However, a source who worked on SimCity told Rock Paper Shotgun the servers are not handling any of the computation to simulate the city, and many players, including myself, have noticed that you can continue to play the game even when the servers go offline.
Pew Internet Research says that one in four American teenagers are mostly internet users. That means that they choose their phones to go online rather than using a laptop or a desktop. 78% of those surveyed teens had cell phones, and 47% of that 78% owned a smartphone. The study also said that 95% of teens use the internet. Wait, what, 5% don't? That's impossible.
They're sleeping.
They didn't answer the survey. Yeah. But yeah, go away.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by The Resumator. It's the hiring solution for small and fast-growing businesses. How do these numbers sound to you if you're in a hiring position in a small business? I don't know whether you're an HR professional or a business executive. You want to reduce the time spent on hiring tasks by 50%. Because we know how much time it takes to spin your wheels and get people hired. Reduce the cost per hire by as much as 85%. Try replacing your HR inbox or some tracking system that you've been struggling with the Resumator. It's an end-to-end hiring package, helps you manage the entire process. Sourcing. You can attract applicants to your jobs using your own website, or you can use free job boards or social media connections. Brings it all together for you, easy to manage. Helps you screen applicants so you can rank, track, and discuss resumes to identify top qualified applicants in your talent pool. Helps you with the interview process so you can schedule meetings with the candidates, collect feedback from the other folks who interview them, and it helps you hire the candidates. You can use it to collaborate and compare and select the best person for the job and get them working on your business instead of just spinning your wheels trying to hire somebody. The Resumator helps you manage the flow of incoming applicants, the pre-screening process, communications with candidates all in one place. Focus on your business and have better control of the hiring process. If you're a business owner, a hiring manager, or an HR pro, you want to save time, money, and increase traffic to your job posting. So check out The Resumator for a 30-day free trial and, because you're listening to Tech News Today, a 15% discount. Go to theresumator.com, that's theresumator.com/TNT. Now, after the free trial, the base package is $99 per month, 5 open jobs and 5 users, and they have other packages to suit you as well. We thank The Resumator for their support of Tech News Today. All right, on to the discussion of the news of the day, and joining us to give his insight on it, great to have back Dan Patterson, Managing Editor at CoPoint. How's it going, Dan?
Guys, it's great to be here.
It's good to have you. Let's start off. We were going to talk a little bit about Google Now coming to iOS, but that seems much less interesting now that Andy Rubin will be developing the Google Moon settlement, or at least that's my take on it. What it does say is that he is going to hand over the reins to Sundar Pichai. Sundar Pichai has been running Chrome, the browser, not the OS. So don't get too conspiracy theory about it. I don't know who's going to take over the Chrome project, but Andy Rubin's the guy who brought Android over to Google. So this is a big move. Andy's decided it's time to hand over the reins and start a new chapter at Google. Andy, more moonshots, please, writes Larry Page. Thinking moon. No, but seriously, what do we think? It kind of makes sense to me that Andy Rubin, having brought Android up from nothing, brought it over to Google, managed it to be the dominating mobile operating system of the day worldwide, that he is ready to take on a new challenge. He's ready to move on. He's a startup kind of guy. Sarah, any best stab at what you think he might be doing there in Google?
Well, as far as what Ruben is going to do next, my guess is as good as yours. I do think it's, you know, startup guy comes over, runs the Android OS. It's wildly successful. Google says more than 700 million activated devices are running Android globally. And if Sundar Pichai is running Chrome, and I know that Chrome and Chrome OS are two different things, but eventually, you know, we hear more and more, like, why would Google be putting so much effort into these kind of distinct different OSs? You know, shouldn't they start to overlap more at some point? This looks like these are the beginning stages of that happening.
Yeah, I mixed up Chrome OS and Chrome in the news fuse because Sundar Pichai is actually the one who demoed Chrome OS for the first time. I was a little frazzled because it just happened before the show. My mistake there. But yeah, Chrome is so integral in Android at this point. It only works, I think, on Android 4.0 and higher. It makes a lot of sense that putting this team together with the browser that's, I mean, incredibly popular. I'm very curious what Ruben's going to do at Google. I mean, he could do anything because Google puts money into every crazy project. Who knows if he'll be going to, I mean, I was joking in the news about Google Books, but I mean, that's a product that they have that doesn't do so well. Google Shopping's been a mess for years. Lots of different things that Google could use a shot in the arm, although I don't know what kind of thing Andy Rubin would bring to that.
What? Okay. This is just crazy talk now, but it's a good point that Sundar Pichai actually did demo Chrome OS. It's not like he isn't got his fingers in it at all. And Andy Rubin, what was he good at? He was good at developing an operating system that was open source and could innovate and dominate on a new platform. What if Andy Rubin moves on to create an entirely new Google operating system with its roots in Chrome OS? Android and Chrome OS merge into a mobile operating system, which a lot of people, including Molly Wood, back in the Buzz Out Loud days, have been calling for forever. And then Andy, that Google Pixel suddenly makes sense as a prototype for a new kind of computer that Google puts out with this Chrome OS derived but more functional operating system. What do you think, Dan? Well, am I nuts?
With breaking news like this, it's really difficult to determine whether this represents a systemic shift within Google's internal management infrastructure or whether it's time for, you know, Ruben is the father of Android. Maybe it's just time for him to move on. It is fun, though, with the moon comet. It's fun to speculate on things like this. And like you said, Ruben is best known for working in small, tight environments. So perhaps he could be working to develop something, or it could be something boring like, well, it's just time to move on.
Yeah, maybe he ends up leaving. I mean, when people of Ruben's stature leave, a lot of times it starts with he's going on to another role in the company. And then a couple months later, he's leaving now.
Yeah, I think a page is...
It could also be, you know, Ruben didn't come and Android wasn't built in-house at Google. You know, they purchased Android and brought it in-house. And it could be, right, look, I did this. I moved to Google. Okay, now I'm going to go someplace else and do cool stuff.
Yeah, I'm looking at the blog post from Larry Page and it says, Andy's decided it's time to hand over the reins. We don't know how that happened. It could have been like, hey, Larry Page called him to his office saying, you're going to be handing over the reins.
Yeah, right.
And Andy's like, sure.
Right.
Or he could have been like, yeah, I want to do something different. I mean, I've noticed for the longest time Android moving a lot towards that WebOS style. And I always bring up Matthias Duarte because he's in charge of a lot of the things we're seeing out of Android. Kind of curious what kind of day-to-day management Ruben was getting to do, because it seems like a lot of the UI is heavily influenced by Duarte. So we've seen a lot of merging of, or actually having a unified look for Google between Google Now, Google Mirror, and their Glass, all these things. Maybe Ruben doesn't fit in with that anymore.
I think
it might be the best way to see where this is going might be to look at what kind of manager Ruben was. Is he a good people manager or is he a good technology manager?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I think he's a little bit of both. I don't think he's, from what I've heard, he's bad at either. I mean, Jason, you covered the what would Andy say or what did Andy say?
Yeah, it's been an ongoing segment and all about Andrew.
What do you think of that? Is he known as a particular type of manager?
I have, you know, honestly, I don't have so much of an impression of what kind of a people manager he is, but I mean, it's undoubtedly so that his influence in Android from the beginning has been pretty significant. But like, you know, like you guys were saying, with Matthias Duarte's kind of influence, that's what you really see. And that's almost kind of the shift that we've seen in the past year and a half has been directly related to Matthias Duarte. So maybe Andy's kind of perspective on Android, you know, was great at getting it started, great at getting it off the ground. And now with this new kind of vision with Jelly Bean and going forward, they need, you know, to just change it up to keep improving on that and not maybe, you know, end up reverting a little bit. I don't know.
TechCrunch posted that picture of that big Android statue that was out, the big, the covered in chrome, last month. And it's like, was this a sign? Who knows? I forgot about that story that just popped up a while ago.
I honestly think that the whole Chrome OS and Android merging or not merging is a separate story from Ruben. I think he probably stays with Google. I don't see any reason why he would leave. He might do a Google Ventures-backed project that's kind of spun out and slightly independent.
I mean, ultimately, when you look at it, he's been largely successful. I mean, he's been successful at doing great things with Android. So it's not like he failed here. I'd be really surprised.
Well, I don't know. Google wouldn't get rid of him. I don't think either. I think it's more likely if he did leave, it's because he's bored. I mean, we kind of covered that ground. Mm-hmm. But what I do think is that we don't have any clue what Andy Rubin is going to be up to next.
Absolutely.
Larry Page said more moonshots. And if it's a moonshot, it's probably hard for us to even guess at it. Mm-hmm. It's probably something that none of us would have thought of.
That's a good way to end it, Tom. What I'm sure of is that none of us actually have a clue.
Yeah. So many people in the chat room is like, wow, so much speculation. It's like, well, all we know is he got reassigned. So we're having a little fun.
We found
here,
that out 5 minutes before the show.
Yeah, we don't know. Yeah. Let's talk about something we do know, which is Samsung is making it rain marketing money.
Yeah, that's right. Samsung versus Apple in marketing in the U.S., if you look at 2012, last year, Samsung spent more than Apple did, $401 million in promotional efforts. Apple's budget was in the 300s, $333 million. That's according to research firm Kantar Media. And I think we could all, you know, some of us watch more TV than others, but I think we could all probably point to a Samsung commercial or three that we noticed recently. Samsung has been running the Next Big Thing campaign on TV, also had a big party for the U.S. launch of the Galaxy Note 2, which included a performance by Kanye West. And then, of course, tomorrow, the company will be unveiling the new Galaxy S4, which is happening at Radio City Music Hall, which happens to be just a few blocks from Apple's big flagship store in New York City. You know, the Radio City can hold about 5,000 people, so it's a big unveiling. They'll also be broadcasting the event live from Times Square. And it's the first time a flagship smartphone from Samsung has been unveiled in the U.S. since the Galaxy S back in 2010. So this is not just a, you know, sort of a splashy big unveiling, you know, everybody come and see what the S4 has, but purposefully happening kind of in, you know, on the soil that Apple has dominated recently. And then, of course, we've got rumors about what the S4 will and will not have. Is there going to be eye scrolling? Is there not? New York Times said, yeah, Galaxy S4 will include some sort of eye scrolling. Some other sources say it's more of an eye tracking technology. So, you know, maybe pausing videos if your eyes look away more than traditional scrolling. I don't know. Dan, you're based over in the East Coast. Do you think this seems like Samsung gunning for the kind of sort of splashy event that Apple would have thrown?
Yeah, it does. I get a big kick out of watching Samsung, especially over the last 18 months or so. Tactically, they've executed. I think that when they are done with this campaign, we'll be able to go and find little ticks on where they have decided to be aggressive, where they've decided to tweak Apple, where they focused on the product, and where they focused on marketing. And it all creates a big moyo, a big group of a strategy that has been intended and designed to attack Apple at their core strengths. It's been a lot of fun to watch. I think you're exactly right. This big event is designed to emulate the exact same aesthetics that Apple pioneered 5 or 6 years ago.
Ayaz, when you look at some of these specs that are, you know, rumored for the S4, you know, we got this 13 megapixel camera, which is a huge jump from the S3 and obviously a huge jump over what the iPhone 5 currently has. You know, we have a lot of rumors about when Apple will announce a next version of the iPhone, but it's not going to be tomorrow. Is this Samsung blazing ahead as far as not just a, you know, a phone that people want, but a phone that actually makes something that Apple's putting out look like a dinosaur?
I mean, the rumored specs seem really intriguing. I mean, when you get a phone these days, it's supposed to last you at least 2 years. That's the cycle people are usually upgrading their phones. And this seems like a vast improvement over the S3. So they need to make sure that when you look at this phone, you want to have a reason to upgrade. What Apple's got sitting around has been called boring by people, even though some people think it's perfect. So that's why they don't change it. But it's also really been the same for a very long time. And no one's expecting the iPhone 5S or whatever it's called to be some like standout design winner. It's supposed to probably be the same style with some new innards. But I think that with Samsung's giant marketing blitz and having these bigger events, I think they're outdoing Apple when it comes to their presentations. Apple does a very simple, like, here's our keynote. We're going to show you something simple. We'll build to that big thing at the end. But Samsung's doing like teaser videos with this Jeremy kid. I know that's silly, but they still did teaser videos for a press event that they're holding in the United States, which is, you know, Apple's ground. This is very unusual. So maybe they're just flat out saying, look, we're throwing this challenge down. We're going to own this market. And Samsung's doing a great job with it so far.
See, I disagree. I'm less excited about the launch of the Galaxy S4 because of the Jeremy stuff and the dancers, the bowler hats. It just makes me roll my eyes, and I'm like, you know what? This is just overhyping. There seems to me like they're trying to make up for something that's not going to be that great. Where, like you say, Apple may drone on and on and on for way too long about their products, but it is very simple what they do. They come out and they show the product, and I appreciate that part of their presentation, even if it's not perfect. I'd rather just somebody quickly tell me what the product is, what its specs are, but maybe that's because I'm working in this industry and I want to get things done right away.
I think this spectacle.
I think we're not in the demo for this, Tom. I think this is designed to convince a different consumer.
The local news will cover the spectacle of Jeremy opening up a box that's glowing.
Oh,
and everything.
Yeah,
like that.
No, you're absolutely right about that. All right, let's talk about something else I'm also not in the demo for. Netflix and Facebook finally get their vaunted integration in the United States.
Yeah, starting today, Netflix users in the United States can share what they're watching with their friends. Netflix spokesperson says that more international users will receive this update. There are already a bunch of markets that have this. By default, sharing happens on Netflix only. This isn't like Spotify where everything's just streaming by on the right rail. But you can, if you want to, go into your settings and have your movies show up on Facebook. You'll get two new rows in Netflix, watched by your friends and your friends' favorites. You can also choose to unshare titles. So, you know, if you're watching Titanic 2 and you don't want everybody to watch that or to know you're watching that, you can click the Don't Share button to remove it later, or during the viewing. All 27 million U.S. streaming members will have access to this in the United States by the end of the week. Dan, do you think the social feature is going to help Netflix gain mindshare with all its original programming coming up? Because I know if Tom actually put something on Facebook saying, I'm watching Arrested Development, I didn't even realize it was out. Do you think this is going to get people to talk about these shows?
Well, from a business perspective, I think it's essential. I'm actually curious as to why it took so long for Netflix to integrate with Facebook and what the particulars of this agreement were. It's essential. As somebody who's trying to decrease the amount of Facebook in my life, I don't want to share what I'm watching, and I don't want to see what my friends are watching. Sometimes that's private, but I am dissimilar from the majority of Netflix's consumers, and I think it's just that you have to have a Facebook sign-on, and you have to integrate now. It's essential, and I'm curious as to why it took them this long to integrate that feature.
I mean, I think that the reason they couldn't was a U.S. law. That had to be changed. I think they successfully got that changed, and that was one of the reasons in the U.S. anyway, it was held back. Sarah, you got any angle on the social scene with this? Because it seems like, yeah, a lot of us don't want people to see what we're seeing. But then again, maybe consumers like this?
Well, I mean, this isn't too different than how Spotify gained a lot of users. Many of them are still using the free version of Spotify. But just because there was so much social sharing happening in news feeds and timelines with the Facebook integration, Netflix is late to the game here. But it's the same idea. And I actually think, you know, I've got a Netflix account. I don't use it as much as I could. And part of that is because, you know, back in the day when I started using the instant streaming function, you know, we all sort of mumbled and grumbled that the library wasn't as good as, you know, the DVD service. So if Iaz is watching a movie that I didn't realize Netflix had because I haven't sort of been digging into the library recently, sure, that might get me to watch a few more movies that I might not have otherwise. And I agree with Dan. I don't think this is that huge of a deal. It's just something that Netflix wanted to implement a couple of years ago, and now finally it's able to legally.
Tom, do you think movies are as social as music? It seems like when you're sharing music, you just click a button, you can listen to that 2-minute track, but a 1-hour movie?
Yeah, but how many people sit around and talk about music tracks? Some. Everybody talks about movies. People talk about movies all the time. So I think it's totally social. And I actually get this. I kind of agree with Sarah Perez at TechCrunch when she points out the problem here is that you don't have a Netflix profile. So if I share it with my Facebook, anytime Eileen watches a movie on Netflix, that's going to show up on my Facebook and vice versa. And it's an even bigger problem for families where, you know, Jason's got kids, you got kids, Iaz. When your kids watch stuff, it's going to show up on your Facook feed.
I think, honestly, all my friends are going to want to watch Curious George.
Exactly. So I like the idea of seeing what people are watching, but Netflix can't deliver that unless you live alone and you're the only one on the account.
Yeah, there was that rumor a while ago that Netflix was going to roll out individual queues for accounts. But right now, like you're saying, Tom, it's one queue if you have that one account. If it's shared, you have all of these weird things showing up, like, here's a rom-com that I was watching, and here's a violent movie that this person was watching. I mean, it could totally be different. But I think, you know, at first when I saw this story, I thought it was a little silly. But then again, I use GetGlue all the time. I use all kinds of these applications to share what television shows and movies I'm watching. So it's not that crazy to me to think, hey, Netflix, which I'm watching anyway, and that's the thing I'm using with GetGlue, why not just make it a little bit more seamless, a little bit easier to share this information? I think a lot of people are going to end up using this to just talk about the new stuff that comes out on Netflix because they're getting more and more into original content.
I just take a quick break, and I'm going to talk about something that's seamless and simple, getting rid of your used gadgets. Now, you may think, ah, a headache. I look at all these used gadgets I've gotten running around. I know I can't just throw them out. That's irresponsible. I want to sell them, but it's so troubling to try. Forget that. Hassle-free selling is available right now. Gazelle.com. Go do it. Take that old iPhone, that old Samsung phone. If you're like, well, wait a minute, I haven't got my new phone yet. Go do it anyway. It's risk-free. You go to Gazelle.com. You lock in your price. Find out how much cash they're going to give you for it. Sometimes they give you money for a broken iPhone and an iPad, for instance. And then you've got that quote for 30 days. You've got 30 days to decide what to do next, even if that's your current phone and you're just thinking about it. All of a sudden, maybe you can get a little better phone than you thought because you're getting some cash from Gazelle. So go to gazelle.com, tell them the condition, get that risk-free offer, lock it in for 30 days, and then once you send them the device, you'll get paid fast by check or PayPal. It's trustworthy. Gazelle has paid $50 million to over 500,000 customers. I've used them many times. It's just an easy way to get your gadgets turned into cash. It's like magic. Plus, they give you free shipping. Most items even qualify for a box. So check out the old iPhone 4, iPhone 4S, Samsung Galaxy S3. They're buying all those kinds of things. They buy Android phones. They buy laptops. What's your iPhone, your iPad, or your Android smartphone worth? Take a minute. Go to gazelle.com and find out. Sell your used iPhone or Samsung Galaxy smartphone today at gazelle.com. And we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. You might want to be saving up money for, I don't know, an 18-inch tablet. That seems to be the new thing these days. Joining the Sony Vaio Tap 20 and the Asus Transformer IO or AIO or in the gargantuan tablet market comes the Dell XPS 18, an 18.4-inch Windows 8 tablet. Now it's running full Windows 8. It's actually only 4.87 pounds.
It's like a laptop.
Yeah. And it's got a kickstand, so you can kind of prop it up off the desk, or you can buy an optional stand that will make it stand up like an actual all-in-one monitor. It does come with a Bluetooth keyboard and a Bluetooth mouse. Got some nice specs, 1920 by 1080 pixels, two USB 3 ports, and it's only $899. It's actually the cheapest of these gargantuan things to come out. I know these things always catch your eye, Iaz. What do you think of this one?
Okay, one, I like that Dell's trying to do this because Dell doesn't have a lot of exciting designs these days. But, I mean, if this is what's happening to PCs, I'm a little scared. It's just, I guess Windows 8, this is the big push, touch first. And if you don't have a touchscreen on your monitor, it just doesn't seem right to have Windows 8. If you're going to have these big tiles, you're not going to navigate that with the mouse. But as for the design, I think it's really interesting that this is the new product category. I was fascinated by the old Microsoft Smart Display, where you'd be able to take the screen off of your devices.
I always liked that too.
But it ran a second operating system. There was a lot of things that were laggy. There are different versions of this with like remote desktop, splash top applications. But the fact that you pick up this device and it remains a Windows 8 device at the same time, I think that's pretty interesting. I don't know if it's going to be a huge hit with anybody. But I think this is the way this market's going.
4 gigs of RAM, 320 gigabyte hard drive. You can upgrade that if you pay more to 8 gigs of RAM and a 512 gigabyte solid state drive. If I'm reading this right, Dan, does this turn your head?
Well, it does turn my head for two different reasons. And the first is that this is, like Aya said, coming from Dell. That's very interesting in and of itself, particularly the issues that company has had with reinventing itself. The second story, the device itself, I think that this is the future of computing. It just is. This, perhaps for consumers, consumers won't find need for something like this, but highly vertical markets, everybody uses the example of a doctor's office or other high-tech industries. Yeah, this is the future of computing, and it's here, and it's interesting.
Sarah, for two-thirds the price of a MacBook Air, roughly, you can have an 18-inch fully functional Windows 8 computer on your lap.
Yeah, I guess, you know, is this the answer to, you know, the post-PC era? Well, I think for some people, this is great. I mean, it's basically you have a laptop that has, you know, some touchscreen functionality, but really is just more portable. I mean, I guess that's the main difference I see in why somebody would want something like the Dell XPS. You know, 18 inches seems crazy big to me. But then again, when you don't have it all sort of, you know, when it's all not one piece, maybe that seems like a better size because you really kind of had to have a desktop set up, but then something thin enough, you know, that it can go in a variety of bags. I don't know. I think it looks pretty nice, actually.
I'm also intrigued by the idea how tablets are kind of locked down when it comes to, hey, I want to watch Hulu Plus or Hulu. I have to pay extra money for that on my tablet. This giant box that I can carry around is a full PC all the time. So I can always access these other things. Sometimes, you know, when I'm in my house, I want to grab the screen of whatever desktop I have because it's running everything behind there. I don't want to run Splash Top. I don't want to run Remote Desktop. I want to sometimes take this device.
That's why I like this better than the I/O because it's not, oh, you're going to run Android when you pull it away. It's just Windows 8 everywhere you go. It's simple. Apple Maps. You probably haven't thought of that recently. I thought of it recently because it's still the default when you click a link sometimes, right? Like out of the calendar. And I accidentally used it to get somewhere the other day and I arrived. Is it getting better, Sarah?
Yeah, it is. And I wanted to talk about this story because I was recently on vacation myself in Miami, which I'm not very familiar with. So, you know, I was using Maps regularly and I've got my little Maps folder on my iPhone. And, you know, I've got Apple Maps or Google Maps. And it's like, come on, which one am I going to choose? I'm going to choose the reliable one. But it kind of got me thinking, you know, what's going to make me use Apple Maps again? Because in my mind, it's ingrained that it's inferior. Jim Dalrymple over at The Loop says, Apple's actually been pushing out some pretty significant updates to Maps in really big markets. Japan, for example, got toll road notifications, better pronunciations during turn-by-turn nav, some updated icons, labels for freeways, you know, stuff that's very, very, it's crucial if you actually want to use it legitimately to travel across the country. Subway lines, fire stations, added more 3D views for big, touristy spots, you know, like Tokyo Tower, that sort of thing. Also, Apple added flyover support for a number of cities in the U.S. and worldwide, like Baltimore, Maryland, Glasgow, Scotland, even Hoover Dam. Expanded flyover support in a number of major cities where it already had limited flyover support. And then, of course, a key market being China for Apple. Maps in China now has a new coloring scheme, new Chinese character font for better readability. And then general updates include location information for Apple stores across the world, and businesses and movie theaters, airports, transit stops, you know, all of that stuff that seemed really lackluster when we saw the first version of Apple Maps last year. Again, you know, if I hadn't read this, I would never know that anything is getting better because I'm sort of, you know, I'm staying away from Apple Maps because I have better options. Dan, do you follow the improvement of Apple Maps? Do you think that they're a little late to the game because no one really has to care?
Yeah, I don't follow the developments, but I check in every once in a while. And in fact, this morning I pinged a friend of mine who lives in a rural area in the mountains about this because he was a friend of mine who is not a techie, but he was broken after the update this past fall. And one thing he said that I think kind of goes to the core of this issue, and that is, he said, it just broke my trust. I was, you know, he was literally going in the wrong direction. And he said, it's hard for me, no matter what the improvements may be, it's hard for me to think that I can rely on an Apple product again. And that was, it's a huge statement.
I think Apple might build its trust if they, when they use Siri and that's the default version, because you can't change your mapping app by default. As long as you have other hooks into that Maps app, people are using that thing. And I know Siri is just half-baked still. It's not completely ready. And if that becomes a bigger hook, or if they have other applications that can hook into Apple's Maps, maybe then people will try it again. But for me, I will go out of my way to avoid using Apple Maps. Right. I have and Google Maps on there. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I have Apple Maps on there. I have my GPS app. I have a bunch of different apps that I trust well before I will bother to use Apple's Maps, because if I want to use that, it's only to test if I know a route very well. It's like, well, that's going to tell me the wrong way. That's the wrong way. Good to know that. But I don't think it's going to be a real problem, because Apple can't change. I mean, people can't change your Maps app.
Maybe because I used that Google Maps app that was the Apple Maps app for years, I feel this way. But I don't feel like any of these Maps apps actually give me all the things I want. The new Google Maps app for iOS works differently. It doesn't show all the things on the map that it used to when you scan. It is very much oriented around navigation, not just looking at a map and finding things and being discovered. And then there's Waze, which is perfect for navigation. It's better than Google Maps. But I use Google Maps a lot more often than Waze because it's right there and it's easy. And Apple Maps is there and it's the default, so I'm going to accidentally use that sometimes. I just on that platform, I feel like there's no good map solution anymore. And it's not that Apple Maps sucks anymore. It's like nobody's got it right.
Yeah, the Maps app with your stocks app and your weather app, they just keep in that folder you never touch. If only you could put Newsstand in there too. You just can't.
Mm. All right, let's finish up with Intel releasing an optimized version of Android.
Yeah, Intel just released its latest pre-alpha version of Android 4.2.2, optimized for Intel processors. It's powered by the Linux 3.8 kernel. It has UEFI boot support and it can dual boot with Windows 8. This is full on Windows 8, not Windows RT. Intel is warning, though. This is on their page. This is a developer preview release of pre-alpha quality. It is buggy and not highly optimized. You have been warned. That's a quote. So if you're a developer and you try it out, also be aware that Bluetooth is not enabled. Dan, do you think a dual boot phone is the hook that Intel could use to get a real foothold into mobile?
No, definitely not. But I think that it's really interesting regardless. I think a dual boot phone, maybe it's not a mainstream consumer need. It doesn't solve anyone's problem. But if you like me, like to tinker and hack, it might be great.
Yeah, it's kind of the way I feel too, Dan. I want to try this. I want to have a dual boot phone and live with it for a little while and see what can I get out of it, what will be fun and what won't. But I'm not sure that has any massive appeal.
Well, I mean, we're talking about the AIO or the IO, whatever you want to say that. But that's running. The actual screen has a Tegra 3 in or a Tegra 4 because it's from switching to Android. Would this actually work on the tablet space like we're talking about with that Dell XPS? Would you want the XPS 18 to be able to go from Android that's optimized for Intel?
Maybe. But as with a mobile device walking around, I don't want to have to make a decision on what partition did I put that on? Is that on this? Oh, I can't access. You know, I need information very quickly on a mobile, perhaps on a tablet, but I think I'm less likely to tinker and hack on a tablet.
Sarah, what's your take on this? Is Intel ever going to get into this mobile space? I mean, this is a nice little hook. They're trying to use Android. They're trying to get an optimized version for it. But I mean, ARM is running away with this.
Yeah, this seems like a really limited market. Intel can say something like, look what we can do. This is very unique. And there's sort of that wow factor like, hey, that's neat. You can dual boot. Great. But as Dan said, it sounds like it could be cause for confusion, especially when you're on the go and, you know, the mobile universe is very immediate, maybe more than like dual booting. People just want the information that they want on a map, for example. And it seems like the people that would be excited about this are, you know, a handful rather than millions. I don't see this being like how Intel gets back on top of any smartphone market.
Yeah, the other thing is if you're running Windows 8, you could run BlueStacks and have Android apps running on Windows 8, which could be running on Intel just fine. I think that operating system is pretty hefty, so it kills battery life, and that processor is not doing so great compared to ARM, even though they're trying. It's a lot more efficient than it used to be. I like this as an idea. I mean, this is pre-alpha. Who knows how this would actually be done in a consumer version? It might be as easy as flicking a switch like on those other devices. It might be as simple as just having a little window that you're not even aware that's running two operating systems. But it's definitely an uphill battle for Intel at this point.
Yeah, running two operating systems is always a patch over something that isn't working right for consumers because they're not getting everything they want out of one operating system. And as we move into the cloud and operating systems begin to recede into the background, this seems like less necessary in the future. I mean, what I see as a longer-term trend is you're not going to care what operating system you're on because everything is available on a Dropbox or RDO or even a mobile or a cloud operating system in some cases that's virtualized. And so the need for this, I think, is going away. Maybe not in the short term. And that's why I don't think this is a bad thing for Intel to do because it might solve some short-term problems for a lot of people.
I wonder if this is going to get developers a little bit more ease into developing for this version of Android because I don't believe all Android apps work on both versions, the one that's Intel optimized and the one that's ARM optimized. So maybe if you're like, hey, I already have a Windows 8 device, I can develop for this. Maybe that'll help. I'm not really sure how that's going to work out at the end.
Let's fire up the randomizer then. We're not sure about anything except the value of pi. And that's Pi Day tomorrow, March 14th. In the U.S. I know it's 14th March in most of the world, but still, 3.14, it's Pi Day. And Oxford Connect at Oxford University is celebrating from 1:59 p.m. to 2:50 p.m. GMT with having everybody try to calculate pi in an analog way. And they describe several different ways to calculate pi, including one that's dropping needles on a specially lined paper, so the needles are smaller than the gap between the lines, and the number of times the needle will fall on the lines helps you to calculate pi. And over time, if you get enough needles dropped, and really it takes like tens of thousands of needles, you will approximate pi. There's another one where you measure river's deviation from its straight line. I'm the only one excited about Pi Day, aren't I?
I mean, I'm thinking about actual fruit pies. Sorry.
That actually is more exciting in a way. Dan, you're excited?
Yeah, I mean, the geeky 13-year-old in me is always going to get excited about Pi Day.
The geeky 13.14.
1.4.
1.5. Sarah, what are you going to do for Pi Day?
Eat some pie.
Heck yeah. There's no wrong way to celebrate Pi Day when you eat pie.
I mean, there is. Well, there's a wrong way to celebrate Pi Day is by not eating pie.
No hand pies. They have to be circular pies.
Right.
That way we're celebrating both pies.
Yeah.
Very important.
And order your slices in pi r radius squared integers.
And for those who feel like they don't have a sweet tooth, savory pie, lots of fun as well.
That's right. That's right. Don't forget
East Coast pizza pie.
Yeah. That's true too. Let's take a break. Thank our other sponsor for today's show. Very happy to have Ring Central on board. We use them, got phones right all over the place in the studio on people's desks. That's how we get our internal phone system. So we didn't have to run a big expensive PBX system in the basement here at the studio. We used Ring Central. Russell, our IT guy, was the guy who's like, look, it's based in the cloud. So you put some phones on the desk and then people can get their voicemail and their email. They can send faxes, do all that great stuff. And now Ring Central has a new feature called Business SMS. You can send text messages to customers and colleagues from your business phone number. No more using your personal number. You can separate those two and use your Ring Central. Still access it in the cloud. Zero startup costs. No big expensive PBX hardware to install or maintain. And all-inclusive pricing as low as $20 a month per user. You can start right now with a 30-day risk-free trial. They have a special offer for our listeners. When you buy one desk phone, you get a second phone free up to 20 phones. So call this number designated for our listeners here at TWIT, 800-543-9980. That's 800-543-9980. Janice Gusevin, let me tell it to you again, 800-543-9980. Or you can also go to ringcentral.com and use promo code TWIT. Richard, you wasn't paying attention this time? Okay, it's TWIT is the promo code at ringcentral.com. And we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Shall we see what's on the calendar with Sarah Lane back doing the calendar?
We shall. Yeah, man, I missed a few days of this calendar, and I missed it. Google I.O. isn't happening until May 15th. It runs May 15th to the 17th. But Google I.O. tickets sold out today in 49 minutes with a lot of mumbling and grumbling from people saying their online money didn't go through. And I don't know, Jason, you were on top of that because you're going. What happened?
Well, I mean, who knows what happened? Google's online ordering system is what happens and seems to always happen every year with all the things that they sell online. They need
to figure
it out.
We were talking about that before the show. Yeah. Like, this happens with BlizzCon and Comic-Con and all kinds of things like this. Figure somebody would have figured this out by now.
Absolutely.
Also tomorrow, the 14th, Samsung is unveiling that Galaxy S4 at the Samsung Unpacked event in New York City. New York City!
Get a rope. Or let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
I got a couple good voicemails today. Steve has an interesting insight into a previous product that he thinks might have a similar effect to what Google Glass might do to you.
Hey, Tom and gang. This is Steve from New Hampshire. Love the show. You guys were talking about on the March 12th episode about how Google Glass might, you know, give you cross eyes and everything like that. And I just thought back to that R-Zone game system that was, like, out by Tiger or something like that. And I had one, and yes, it definitely made you cross-eyed. It was, like, right in front of your eyes the whole time. It reminds me of that. So I'm kind of afraid of that as well. Thanks for the show.
No, that R-Zone. I do remember that. I never had one.
I completely forgot about that. Yeah, I thought I was talking about Virtual Boy for a second. That just gave you headaches.
Yeah, R-Zone was the knockoff Virtual Boy, sort of. I also got a call from Ian pointing out an interesting anomaly, and he wonders, like, how would this affect the cord cutter? How do they count me? Here's Ian's voice.
Hey, TNT crew. This is Ian from upstate New York. I was listening to episode 708, where you were talking about the Nielsen ratings and the no TV. I have an interesting spin on that one. I am a recent cord cutter, but the cable company actually told me that if I keep basic cable, it's cheaper than if I just do internet. So basic cable with internet is cheaper than if I just get internet. So I don't know how I would show on those stats. I don't use the cable that pipes into my house. It was just a cheaper alternative. Love the show. Keep up the great work.
And he's not the only one.
That's the way my setup is, that it is cheaper to have basic cable. My cable box sits in a closet because I don't care to use it. But yeah, I guess technically I wouldn't be a zero TV family in a Nielsen study.
Yeah.
I might join you. I've been a cord cutter for years and years, and it is by far more expensive for me to have high speed internet through Time Warner Cable, as you can see, than it is to get cable, TV, and internet. To get the package, it's significantly less money.
That was nicely done, by the way.
I guess they still have to prove to the networks, you know, that the networks are relevant. You know, like, look at all these people watching your stuff. Maybe they don't want to, but
households,
you got a household. Them.
Yeah.
They could watch it if they wanted to. We got a message from Rill in Middleton, Wisconsin, WI?
Middleton, Wisconsin.
Thank you.
Yeah.
On Tuesday's show.
Where my brother lives, actually.
I didn't know that. On Tuesday's show, you discussed the government implications if Lenovo bought BlackBerry. Suppose Lenovo was thinking of the Chinese government rather than the U.S. government. Wasn't there a story recently that the Chinese government is becoming more uneasy that most of its phones are running Android, an operating system created by an American company? What if Lenovo bought BlackBerry to produce phones by and for the Chinese? And he linked us an NPR story.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
A really interesting take on that.
No, that is. I'm not sure how possible that is to be true, but it certainly fits that recent sort of Chinese muttering about we need another competitor to come up.
So arguably, that would probably tick off the U.S. when it comes to buying anything from Lenovo, including their laptops. So it's kind of a different take on it.
Got another email from Doug, who is responding to the losing weight by playing video game story. He says, to a physicist, a calorie is the amount of energy needed to raise the temperature of 1 gram of water by 1 degree Celsius. To a dietitian, a calorie with big C is the amount of energy needed to raise the temperature of 1 kilogram of water by 1 degree Celsius. Your mouse click number was in calories little c, not calories big C, and your Snickers bar is measured in big C calories. Are you guys following along?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Do your best. I'm afraid it's going to take more clicking than you suggested to lose weight by playing video games.
So the 1.04 calories per click becomes 0.00104 calories per click.
We got a couple emails about this. I think somebody figured out it would take, 350,000 clicks to do whatever, like 100 calories.
Makes
I
more
feel
sense.
Like, you know, a treadmill desk is minutes. Probably a better use of, you know, burning calories than how many finger clicks. You're going to get RSI before you lose any weight.
You're right.
Sad but true.
I should know.
Yeah. Well, that about wraps it up for us. Dan Patterson, thanks, man, for joining us. Always good to have your insights. Tell folks about what you're doing online and CoPoint and all that good stuff.
CoPoint, we're hanging out with fun and funny people. A ton of stand-up comics in and around CoPoint these days. Guys like W. Kamau Bell, and we just had Jackie Maitland, who is the joke man on the Howard Stern show. So we are drifting a little way away from tech and towards comedy, but we think that's funny.
Yeah, that sounds like a good time, frankly.
I love it. It's fantastic.
Check it out if you're on the audio podcast, KOPOINT.com. Also, check out our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com, a place to go to let us know what stories you'd like us to discuss. The more people in there, the better read we get on what folks want, and the more we pay attention to it. Because when we see hundreds of votes upvoting a story, or even sometimes we see votes downvoting a story, then we know, like, all right, there's a nice chunk. Maybe we still don't know if it's a representative sample, but we're going to pay attention to that. TechNewsToday.reddit.com. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can also email us, TNT@twit.tv, and give us a call. Leave us a voicemail. We got two great ones today, 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll be back tomorrow with Martin Giles from The Economist. See you then.